For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Episode 156. Side effects may include motion sickness.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
For Boston, for Boston.
Bastards and wenches, you may be seated, and welcome to another episode of the Boston Bass Brigade. I am King Baby Duck.
Bluonic.
And yes, folks, it's that time of year again. The trees are turning different colors. The pumpkins are in full bloom.
Topsfield Fair is running.
And there are tons of asshole tourists in Salem.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yep, it is Halloween. The spooks are out in full force. And the horror movies are playing nonstop on the television set.
I think I'm just glad I don't go to Salem State College anymore. Is there any other city that we know of that's like Salem?
What do you mean? Like does this whole Halloween thing?
Or has anything of the sort that, you know, I can't really recollect. Like, I don't think anywhere in the South Shore has a setup like that, you know, where people have to go to. And I mean, I remember there was places like Spooky World or something
yes.
like that. But I'm not saying like that. I'm saying like the people will just come and walk around the streets and just look up in the sky and go, oh my god, I'm in Salem.
I don't think we have any. I don't think there is a city like that. At least one that people only visit one time of the year. I mean, yes, people go to like other cities like Los Angeles and New York and look up in the sky and go, oh my goodness, I am here in Los Angeles after you like a big movie star.
I can almost see the sky, but there's too much pollution in the way.
I can almost see the Hollywood sign over there in the end. I can almost. Damn, it's pollution.
Kill you.
But yeah, I don't think there is another city in America, at the very least, where people come during just one time of year. People go to Germany during this time of year for Oktoberfest, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, in the sense, like, just in Massachusetts, because I don't think, like, any, like, you could really state to any other person that lives in Massachusetts how annoying it is that people will just come out of left field. I mean, it's cool that Rob Zombie was around recording Lords of Salem and stuff
right.
like that.
And I saw him actually film one of the scenes right near where I work, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, which is, it's awesome to see that, but at least he wasn't doing it around Halloween time. Now, I think it's over, he's done with the recording or something.
Yeah, and in fact, he just released a trailer for it. I have not seen it yet. I've heard decent things about it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's at least better than Halloween 2.
Yeah, well, no, it's going to be definitely better than Halloween 2. Anything's better than Halloween 2, really.
Yeah, that still confuses me why he decided to do a sequel, because I remember...
No, he was forced to do a sequel. It wasn't him who decided. He did not decide to do that. They were just saying, okay, you did really good on the first one, we want another one. Somebody wanted to make more money. That's basically what it was.
Because I remember back in the day when we had WFNX, he was on WFNX talking about the first one.
Yeah.
And he said, and I quote, what makes this movie different from all the other Halloween movies is it has a beginning, it has a middle, and it has an end.
Yeah.
The first one ended pretty well with her shooting Michael Myers in the face, killing him.
Yeah. But that's not what happened. They had to force him into making another one.
They had to make him a superhuman of sorts.
Yeah.
Which goes against even the regular Halloween canon, honestly.
Yeah, basically.
So, by ordering the sequel, Michael Myers was no longer Michael Myers. Hell, you made the comment.
He basically turned into friggin' Jason.
Yeah, you made the comment of him grunting and actually making noise while he was killing. And Michael Myers never made a sound while he was doing the slicing.
Chink. That's it. Dead. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to make a sound. That's that's the thing about him.
Yeah. But hopefully this new one, The Lords of Salem, because I know he's been working hard on this film for the past couple of years. He worked on the screenplay for 1 year, and then he has this, and then he started filming around here in Salem, and then while going back to Los Angeles to film a couple other scenes. I think the most of it was filmed in Salem, though.
Yeah. So, but that's Hollywood East for you now.
Yeah. I'm still hoping that something can happen with this.
I don't care.
I know we've been having more movies coming here to film. Larry David was just in town. He's filming this movie for HBO.
And it seems like Adam Sandler's moved back to his hometown, basically, and he's been recording all around here again.
Right, so, with Grown Ups too.
Yep. Then they did Here Comes the Boom. That was recorded in Somerville, I think, and some other parts. But
yep.
It's just too much right now. I hate it. Like, everybody... you know, it's one of those things where if it's L.A., they're used to it. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, this street's closed. Oh, we got 500 other streets to go down. But if they go and close down, like, one of our little main artery streets that, you know, you got to go down,
it's
going to back up traffic for about 5 hours.
It's like an automobile heart attack waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Clogging those arteries.
And, yeah, I doubt that they're paying anything back into our, you know, little towns that would be significant,
right,
with the millions of dollars that they make.
And the thing is, I feel like our side here, Hollywood East, needs to also focus some on the independent circuit. Not have just the big movie Hollywood blockbuster or comedy, whatever, film here. We need to see some small independent films being made here that get out to the general public.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with that.
Because when you're doing a small independent film, there's so much that, or rather, there's so little that you can ask for. Not that much money, not much time to film, not many places you can close down so you can use that area to film.
Little permits here and there, but that's it.
Right. When you have a big budgeted movie, you're shutting down like a big chunk of a city for, I don't know, like the whole day.
Yeah.
or most of the day. And it takes too much out of the average citizen here in Boston. And like you said, Hollywood and Los Angeles, they're used to that, which is why they have so many different areas.
Hey, they're going to blow some shit up. Let's just watch. Or like the other assholes did on that Kick-Ass video that we were watching. They wouldn't shut up.
Yeah.
They were trying to take pictures with a flash and everything like that. It's like, what are you doing? But yeah, no, more or less with this whole setup, it does suck for Salem. I'm glad I don't go to Salem State anymore because of the fact that it was just always a holy hell just to get through there.
Well, especially during this time of year.
Yeah, it was not fun.
Well, we still have fun memories of going to the college itself.
I don't.
Come on.
It was miserable.
All those fun moments at our radio station at WMW in Salem.
I'm not saying that was miserable. I'm saying the people, the classes, they were miserable.
Well, the classes were miserable, but the friends that we got to make there, they were pretty cool.
Yep.
And that's all that we can really say.
A lot of gay and lesbian friends.
Yes.
Transgender, too.
Yep. We have
Thanks,
built...
King. Thanks, King.
Ooh.
Thanks, King.
We have built ourselves a nice little lesbian army.
Yeah, right. Lesbians assemble!
Yes. Go on and attack with hugs.
Yeah, right.
Only your hugs can defeat them.
All right, well, let's move on.
Let us move on. I've got some very happy news. Some things that I'm just really, really excited about. One of my favorite cartoons has returned to the airwaves. In Japan, at least. But you can watch it here in America on Crunchyroll.
Of course. Of all places, Crunchyroll.
Crunchyroll. And when I did my top 10 list of great anime comedies of the 2000s, this was number one. This was my top anime comedy of that decade. Hightail the Combat Butler.
Ah, he's back again.
Yes. Now remember, this is the Combat Butler. This is not Maid Guy.
Combat Butler. No.
So, what makes this season different is that it's all non-canon. And do you understand what non-canon means?
there's multiple different ways of canon that I know of. Like, if it's a music canon, it's like one is going over the other because it's the echoing wave, but I'm not sure what you're saying.
So when a story runs on canon, that means it's following the original storyline. Whereas with High Tater Combat Butler, for the most part, it follows the original source. It follows the original comic or the original Japanese manga.
Okay.
For this season, everything about it is new. It's not an original comic, and it's a totally different storyline. But all the story arcs for this season have been written out by the series creator, Kenjiro Hata. Okay. So it's still from the mind of the original creator. It's not some other dude trying to adapt his story. It's still him. Okay. So this past week, the first episode premiered, and I gotta tell you, the way that this show, I wouldn't say the first, when it first opens up, because the first, when it first opens up, you see the main character of Haite explaining, hey there, we've been gone for the past couple of years, even though we did have that movie there, but we're back, and we're gonna do something totally different. This is gonna be totally different from the manga, and we are going to try out something that maybe you might like, maybe you won't like, but I hope you tune in and enjoy it.
And screw with your mind. In a bad way. In a bad way.
So then it cuts to Las Vegas.
What? Weren't they in like Japan or something?
Yeah. But it cuts to Las Vegas. And you see the character of Nagi, who's the 13-year-old that Haite's been taking charge of protecting and being the butler of sorts. And she's like in the middle of the desert, car smashed up. I don't know who gives the 13-year-old a car.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but when I'm watching this scene, all I can think of is that song from The Hangover, the opening theme, the one by Danzig.
Okay.
Because this song could have fit in very well with like this opening. Because you see her there, she's bitching about the heat, just looking up to the sky, sun's bearing down on her.
Where's my water?
Yep. Her handkerchief is blown from her reach and onto a nearby cactus, and the heat gets to her to a point where she starts yelling at the cactus, claiming that it steals it, that it's stolen it. And so she decides to go and try to grab it. Well, when you're out in a hot desert and you're in a car, what's one thing you should not do?
Roll up the windows.
Well, she's in a convertible, so
Leave the top down.
So
leave the car running.
Well, you can't leave the car running.
Put the tailpipe in with a hose in the window and turn it on.
How about don't touch the outside of the car?
No, that was going to be like my 17th guess. Sorry. No, that's not right. No.
Because she burns her hand. As soon as she gets out, a bunch of sand blows into her eyes, blinding her. To the point where she actually runs into the cactus face first.
Oh, man.
And then, as usual, Nagi calls out to Hayate, because whenever she calls out to Hayate, he just appears out of nowhere. So he could be on the other side of the world, and he comes to her when she needs him.
Okay.
But then, after she screams a name out, she then reveals, oh crap, that's right, he's not my butler anymore. So then, the story like goes, so then the episode...
So it rolls back.
Rolls back a couple days. Where you find out school's about to start. Haite is very motivated. Can't wait for school to start up again. And then Nagi is in bed. As usual, not motivated at all. He comes in with the clock. Nagi, come on, wake up. It's time to go to school. She takes the clock, rewinds it back to 6 o'clock, and goes to sleep. So he finally finds a way to motivate her. I forget what it was. I think he just pulls her out of bed, kicking and screaming.
I would say pot and pan.
But then the main maid, she gets a phone call. Maria. She gets a call from Las Vegas saying that they have discovered a bunch of things that belong to the father of Nagi, who had apparently passed away a while back, before she was even born. They say that he died of a car accident or something.
Okay.
And the mother passed away when Nagi was young. And at first, she doesn't give up. Because she's one of those little shut-in people who would rather stay inside rather than see the world.
Okay.
So she's watching television, and a television special pops up about aliens in Area 51, which then interests her to want to go to Las Vegas. She makes it, she tries to convince Haite and Maria that she wants to go to get the stuff from her father, but she really wants to see a fucking alien.
Oh, okay. Does it make any sense?
Of course, both of them say no. Nagi gets pissed, and she runs out of the house. Forgetting her cell phone, forgetting her wallet, and leaving her trapped somewhere in Tokyo.
And how'd she get out?
Well, as usual, she calls out to Hayate. Hayate disappears out of nowhere. It's one of those cartoons where you scream out into the air and he comes out of nowhere. It's you know how superhero cartoons work.
So he brought her like passport and all this other stuff to get out of the country?
Well, no. He's still saying wait till a specific week when there's no school to go to Las Vegas to pick up the stuff. Even though he knows that she just wants to go see an alien.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this other girl appears. A mysterious girl that I don't really recognize. I think she was written just for this cartoon. Just because, remember,
this episode?
For this episode.
Okay.
And she distracts Hayate enough for Nagi to get kidnapped. Now, for Nagi, she gets kidnapped a lot. So she kind of shrugs her shoulders while she's being kidnapped by everybody. And so Hayate comes to the rescue, as usual, in most humorous fashion, always chasing a speeding car with a little bicycle.
Okay.
Rescues Nagi, goes back to the mansion, and then he looks behind her, and that little girl's there again, the one that was distracting him. And it's revealed that the little girl is actually Nagi's sister. Which makes you wonder.
Alright, so you're going into a depth of this first one.
That's yes.
Really deep. So, are you going to give shit away?
Well, I basically gave everyone the premise of the first episode. I feel like, though, there's going to be some questions coming up. If this little girl is supposed to be Nagi's sister, is she technically half-sister? Is the father actually still alive in Las Vegas?
Okay.
Did he fake his death to run off with some other floozy? Or did he really just recently die, and that's when they're actually finally getting the call from Las Vegas that there's some things for Nagi to pick up?
Yeah.
That's basically the premise of the first episode. And at first, when I was hearing that this was going to be total non-canon, totally original stories, I was kind of on the fence because, you know, I'm a huge fan of Hayate the Combat Butler. I love the story, I love the humor, and I love the sort of dialogue that you hear in this show back and forth, and the action sequences.
Yeah.
But so far from this first episode, it had all the trademark stuff that was from the past couple seasons and the manga.
So how did they change?
How did they change?
How did it change, man?
Well, they're changing it first off by introducing this new character who claims to be Nagi's sister.
Okay, and then going to Las Vegas, that's a little bit of a change.
But, right.
Okay, so what else?
Well, that's all that happened in the first episode.
That's just the first episode?
That's just the first episode.
Jesus.
There's a lot that happens in the Hayate Combat Butler world.
Okay.
And I loved how they did this so far. And I admit, a couple of times I found myself laughing my ass off during this episode. Which is something that I found myself not doing for most anime comedies these past couple of years. There hasn't been, like, a real show that Japan's put on that made me really almost fall off my seat laughing in a really long time.
Okay. Yeah.
We've got the same voice actors and actresses, so that's always good. But the one thing that I felt was missing, and I'm still scratching my head why they got rid of it, was the narrator. I remember showing you like a couple of episodes years back, and the narrator on the show, who was voiced by a guy named Norio Wakamoto, he'd be the type of narrator that, instead of just telling the story, he would also make commentary. Like, he would make fun of the characters.
He'd interact?
Yeah. Kind of like, do you remember the movie George of the Jungle, where there's...
Yeah, of course. Narrator.
Yeah, the narrator, how the narrator would interact. He would do that. It would always be funny. It would be one of the big highlights of each episode.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they didn't bring him back for this season. I don't know why.
They killed him.
No, he's still alive.
Nope, they killed him.
But I don't know. I mean, right now, as it is so far, the characters themselves are now narrating the series.
Oh.
So, it's okay, but it lacks that sort of icing the cake that the original narrator brought to the table in the original series.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to animation, a lot of people were actually bullshitting and complaining about the animation style of this series. Because it doesn't look anything... Well, I wouldn't say it doesn't look anything like the previous two series. The characters all look the same, but they're just drawn differently.
Now, when you're saying differently, like different shaped or sizes or what?
Proportions. Like, okay, maybe the head... maybe
skinnier or fatter?
I would say smaller bodies, but heads are a tiny little bit bigger. Hair's a little bit bigger. But I've got to say, though, it's actually more closer to the original manga look than the other two. Okay. Like, if you were to watch this episode and then take a look and read through the first volume of the Japanese manga, they match. This series matches the overall look of the original.
Okay.
Which is very good. And the studio who did this, Studio Manglobe, has a very good track record.
Yeah.
They were the ones who did Samurai Champloo with Shigeru Watanabe, who also did Cowboy Bebop.
Watanabe!
And they're the ones who did Ergo Proxy, which was a really weird, fucked up sci-fi anime, but it was awesome because the end theme was done by Radiohead.
Oh, nice.
And they also did the Dante's Inferno anime, the tie-in to the...
video game?
The video game, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So there's a lot good that is happening with this show, but this is just the first episode. I don't know what's going to happen in these next couple episodes. It could be good, it could be bad.
Are you going to have to write about this one, or what?
What I'm going to do, I did a synopsis of the first episode. What I'm going to do is I'm going to wait until maybe 4, maybe 5 episodes in, I'm going to write a full review of the show so far. But fans of High Tech to Combat Butler will like this. We'll like the first episode. I think it's gotten its good charm. It retains its humor and the overall mood of the show. Granted, there's a couple things there that I'm still confused about, like the pop singer that appears here and there within the first episode.
Is he South Korean?
No, it's not Psy.
It is Psy.
No, it's not. It's a woman, anyway.
He's a woman.
I don't think Psy's a woman.
Yes, he is.
But it makes it seem like that this woman might be a villain, villainess, or whatever you want to call her. Is it villainess?
I don't fucking know.
I can give this first episode a solid 4.5 out of 5. It's got the solid humor.
That's probably the best friggin' rating I've heard in anime from you for a while, because it's just been sucking your ass.
Well,
but this is one that we've seen along the years.
This
isn't one that's new, so there's nothing new that has come out of anime besides actual things that you liked previously.
Right.
That are actually doing their friggin' job.
Well, on the show itself, it's been a really long time since I've reviewed an anime on a podcast show. I've done some written, like Kids on the Slope.
No, but that's what I'm saying, that there hasn't been anything really like...
We're talking
about. That's why I'm saying, like, this is the first one that we have in a while.
Yeah. But for those who want to check it out, go on to Crunchyroll.com, look up Haitai the Combat Butler, but the show's got a subtitle called Can't Take My Eyes Off You, like the Frankie Valli and Four Seasons song.
Okay.
If you've got premium membership, you can watch it now. But if you don't, you'll probably have to wait like the following week to watch the first episode.
Bastards.
Well, that's how they make their money, of course.
Bastards.
So, why don't we move on to the movie that we saw today?
What movie did we see today?
We saw End of Watch, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and who's the other guy?
Oh, God. Why did you have to do that?
Why did I have to do that?
You'd be like, yeah, who's the other guy? Well, at least you didn't go, who's the Spanish guy?
No, I didn't say that.
But he's a good actor.
He is a good actor.
I haven't heard his name in a while, so it's like it's not sticking.
Let me pull it up right there. Michael Pena,
yeah. He's been in so many different movies. It's not even funny. He's that's the thing with him. He's been through all the wide ranges of like everything. Like he played the killer gangster guy in 30 minutes or less.
Yes.
And then he's played cops here and there. He's played military guys. He was in Shooter. He was in Shooter with Mark Wahlberg, and he was the FBI agent that got his ass handed to him.
Yep.
So, yeah, end of Watch, which is... It's kind of a funny thing, because, like, it's weird because this is, like, the unit or the crew that takes over for, like, the night shift. So some of the things that you're watching is going from, like, the 3 o'clock shift to, like, 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's that is probably one of the worst shifts that you can end up on. But if you're a fucking cowboy, this is the shift you want to be on.
Right. And I wouldn't say these guys were trying to be cowboys, but...
Jake Gyllenhaal was.
Well, yeah, but not my...
Okay, so, but, like, let's just put it this way. With their actions from previously, right?
Mm-hmm.
That caused the chain reaction to end up where they were by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But that's what it is they came to terms with it where they were... Well, of course, Mike, who is played by Michael Peña, he's married. He doesn't have a kid yet.
Right.
But he's working on it. Then Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Brian, he's a loner. He's the one that he's an ex-Marine. Well, you're never an ex-Marine, I know.
Right.
You're a former Marine that was right. actually in the military and stuff like that. Came out and, like, you know, became a police officer and stuff like that. But what he was doing was he was recording and all that other stuff. So you could see them when they're, like, being young and stupid and childish and stuff like that. But yet, while it goes through the whole setup, you see them, they start becoming mature. But yet, what happens at the end is kind of what happened because of their the childish stuff or the antics that they used to do.
Yes.
But it wasn't just childish, it was just because it was reckless. Like, a lot of the stuff that they were doing was, they were like, you know what, why don't we poke our nose in this thing? And they go and poke their nose in that, and that caused the chain reaction.
Right.
To get, which is shown in the trailer and stuff like that. I really don't think that I want to give too much away from this movie, but the setup with the actual movie
it's kind of like a series of events that lead up to the big one.
Yeah, in my criminal justice stint of, you know, my college years and stuff like that, it did, you know, hold water to what was going on with a lot of the stuff, but that doesn't happen in every friggin' department. This is L.A. L.A. is a nutbag of all sorts. I mean, we had everything from drugs, money, weapons, the AK, the golden AK-47, yeah. Human trafficking again. It was absolutely a madhouse.
Liberace's gun.
Yeah. They had to deal with ICE, for that little bit.
Yeah.
Which they rolled up. It's beautiful. Dodge Chargers! I'm sorry, I was yawning. Dodge Chargers!
I was gonna say, I didn't know you got bored with Dodge.
No, I didn't get bored with Dodge. I've been... It's just this damn weather.
Yeah.
It's messing with me. I want to go home and take a nap now. So, yeah, but the setup was is, you know, they... You know, their partner, they basically run into everything and anything. Like, they went from doing, you know, small petty stuff, but they found stuff every time. They were showing basically every time that they showed up to a scene, it was something big. Like, there was the one where they showed up to the front door and said, oh, yeah, some, you know, woman called about her mother to check up on her and everything like that. And they go, oh, well, I'm gonna. It's like, you're gonna have to boot the door, and he goes, "Okay, let's boot the door." Well, you know, let's check the knob first before you kick it in. He goes, "Okay, yeah. I check it every time before I kick it in. Yeah,
yeah. So let's cut that part out.
Yeah, let's cut that part out. So
because we didn't go into the fact that they're filming all this.
This is being filmed between two different spectrums. There's one that's a mini hand camera. There's another one that's on their clips on their uniforms. But then there's like a third person view that's like actually outside of the cameras and stuff like that.
So on occasion, we actually see the opposing people,
the Spanish
gangs, yeah. Actually filming too.
Yeah, they are. But well, it's not even that. Even the other black gang there was actually, they had like a camera view too at that point.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it seemed like everybody had a friggin' camera, which I wanted to punch them in the face because some of the cameras they had were like ridiculous money. Especially Jake Gyllenhaal's camera, I would kill for that thing.
Well, I could understand, you know, the drug lords having cameras like that. They are rich enough to get something like that, but on a cop salary?
Well,
Yeah, on a cop salary, it's pretty good, but L.A., not so much. L.A. is usually like $30,000
to $35,000. You're serious?
A year, yeah. No joke.
That's bad. That's like the most dangerous city to be in.
Yeah, well, that's just on average of starting. I'm just saying starting. Mm-hmm. So after a while, it might go up to 40, 45. I don't know. But that's the thing is like how they roll down there. A lot of places around here, it depends on the city, depends on the department, and then depends on, you know, how much activity is in your city. So if you have a lot of activity, you're going to be making some big bucks. But, I mean, most prison jobs are now up to $45,000 a year. So I might be going to the prison to work there. But yeah, more or less the whole setup that with them, you know, they had, like, the camera systems just to go around and stuff. But when they go to boot in this door, they're kind of fucking joking around about it, first off.
Yes.
So they get to that point where they're like, you know, tee-hee, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, we're going to kick in this door. And, like, the mother's going to come right around the corner and go, what did you do with the property damage? And we're going to be the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, they kick in the door. And first thing that they go is, like, oh, God. Yep, we got a dead body.
Yeah.
So they go in and they check the area and stuff like that. And lo and behold, they find the woman wrapped up, you know, in bag, in a closet, which was kind of weird in the first place. So, but they didn't, that was the thing that I was trying to figure out was why did they not go, oh crap, this is like a homicide right off the bat? Like, who goes and wraps up a person in a bag?
Or, maybe at that moment they were starting to process the shock value.
He was too busy going over to the other case over there. He opened up the case and he checked out and he found out there was drugs.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, they go and go, oh shit, there's a pot, you know, that's still on getting heated up over there. Oh shit, there's somebody here, maybe. And they go into the other room and then they look and they find another massacre of dead bodies and that have been tortured and all this other stuff that were being tossed in a hole. And of course, I don't know what it was, but where did that person go that had, you know, that was doing that stuff? And why would they leave a kettle, you know, burning on, like, the thing? I don't know how they got out, because they checked the back.
Yeah. I was about to suggest maybe they burned the kettle so it would start a fire, but then that wouldn't explain the drugs.
Yeah. So, more or less, what that whole setup was, a lot of the stuff that you thought was just normal went into, like, absolute shitstorm mode.
Yeah.
You know, but I love how they started out the movie with the car chase. That car chase was pretty badass.
Mm-hmm.
But
then taking them out and shooting them down, it was pretty cool. And they had it angled good too.
Yeah, they had it angled like you were good there. Because of the fact of the camera, how the dashboard camera was. But that doesn't, you know, like there was gangsters that were in that vehicle and they go and hop out and they just get lit up like a Christmas tree. But that's because they started firing first at the police officers. So that's what it is when they get into roll call and stuff like that, and then it's like, oh yeah, so-and-so is back again, you know, for, you know, that shooting that was a good killing.
A good shooting, yes.
Yeah, good shooting, which, in real terms, there's never such thing as a good shooting, shooting, you know. Yeah, good
quotation mark.
Good job putting those guys down to save your lives so you come here and work again so we don't have to train somebody else. It's just one of those things where, you know, they were in kind of a hail of bullets moment, and they were able to take the guys down in the fashion that we're supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
as a good shooting should be. But yet, they still count it as a homicide.
Yeah.
But that's what happens is, you know, good guys, bad guys, supposedly. Yeah.
And there's that whole speech about LA police being fucked. Like, what? How did it go? One of these days, you're going to be fucked.
In the ass.
In the ass. And you're going to be wishing that you can just eat your gun right then and there. And then you're going to do traffic duty, and you're just going to be thinking of all the times when you got fucked in the ass before then.
Yeah. Which, something else happens to that officer, which we don't want to spoil that, but that was definitely a shocker.
Yeah.
But seeing that, it sucked for him because he was dealing with a rookie. And I don't necessarily believe in the concept of tossing a rookie into the worst section of the friggin' thing, but
yeah. You don't do that.
But yet, that's the whole thing about LA. They put officers where they have to, and the person that they had was running around, you know, and I think it was the Asian girl there that was running around going, like, just scared out of her wits that got the shit kicked out of her. And I mean, like, to the point where she got her face, like, her skull got broken in. And she passed the badge right to her sergeant right off the bat and said she quit right there.
Yeah.
And they were taking the other officer off because of the incident that happened with him, which was pretty surreal. But
yeah.
But I've seen him in a lot of other roles, too.
Yeah, me too. He looked very familiar. Because let me see if I can just run down. Let's see. Oh, holy crap.
What?
I can't believe I didn't recognize the Latina cop.
Yeah, that's what's her name from the Traveling Pants movie or something.
America Ferrera from Ugly Betty. Yeah. And she plays one of the characters on How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah. She's an awesome actress. It's just yes. I haven't seen her anything lately to go, oh, there she is. And then when I saw her, I was like, oh, it's her. Fantastic.
Yeah. So let's just say a lot of shit happens in this film. Some of it very dramatic, and there's some good funny stuff happening too. Like when you see Brian getting married and doing the whole dance, the first dance of the wife.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Although when I saw that, like, I thought it was somebody else. I didn't think it was Jake Gyllenhaal with the bald head and, yeah. like, doing the dance. I thought it was one of the Spanish cartel guys.
That's what I thought, too, when I saw the trailer for it.
I was like, oh, isn't that singer slash musician Spanish guy? That,
Pitbull?
You know, yeah, Pitbull. He looked like Pitbull. He really did. He looked like Pitbull with the sunglasses on.
That's what I thought, too.
Because he was rocking the Oakleys.
I'm sure we're not the only ones who thought that.
But, I mean, I thought there was, like, a drug, you know, wedding and stuff like that. But also, they also threw a kind of, like, a little curveball at you because of the Latin gang and stuff like that. There was the female, like, girl that was almost, like, the head of it. She was, like, second in command, basically.
Yeah.
And she was kind of, like, the hardcore gangbanger that was basically, well, she was a straight-up lesbian. But yet she was, you know, the hardcore one that, you know, didn't have anybody mess with her.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
It was very interesting. What about like the advice that Gabby gave to Janet after the wedding? All like the different advice things. What was it?
Something cowboy.
Cup
the ball, squeeze the shaft. Something like that. It was really fucking wrong.
Yeah.
It was wrong on so many levels. But yet
they had to mention the gooch.
It was yeah. He's like gooch. Wait, what?
What's a gooch?
What are you talking about? So more or less that, yeah, they were like in the sense that, you know, how to keep your relationship spicy and stuff like that, you gotta, you know, yeah.
You gotta
be extreme with your relationship, but, mm-hmm. but yeah, for the most part, yeah, it was, all together, this is one of those good movies. Also, it was written, or was it directed by one of the guys that did Training Day?
It was written and directed by David Ayer, who wrote Training Day.
Okay.
It wasn't directed by the same guy who did.
Yeah,
Training.
That was a lot.
That's
of
what I thought.
Where he's wrote a lot of stuff. I mean, he didn't like that's the thing that integrates everything. Is like you got Training Day, then you got like Harsh Times, you got
which he wrote and directed. David.
Then you got what else you got?
You got
Street Kings. No, Street Kings was done. Yes.
He directed Street Kings.
Okay, Street Kings.
He also wrote the
did
original.
Did he do Britain's Finest?
No. Oh, okay. He steered. No,
but that's the thing. It's
he wrote Fast and the Furious.
There's a lot of like movies that when I did my article there for what do you call it? Rampart. When I did that movie for Rampart, that was a good movie in the concept of like how like there's the cop movies that keep coming out and stuff like that. But there's a lot of them that is written or directed by that same guy, and he always does a really good job on it. So. But yeah, this movie, it at the end it becomes almost a tearjerker. I was almost in tears because of what happened. It was really friggin' bad.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't want to spoil it, but I think it was one of those ones where I think one thing is going to happen, and then another thing happens, and then the third thing happens.
Yeah, well,
and something I my mind kept being played with as to what was going to happen in the end.
Yeah, my concept was I thought it was going to be a Hollywood ending or just straight out just tragedy, and it seemed to be almost like a Hollywood tragedy ending. Like it was at the same time. It's how it happened.
Yeah,
but yeah, they did a really good job on the whole movie aspect, and it was amazing. I'm still pissed off that one of my nephew's friends brought him to that, even though he's like 12. But
yeah,
I'll kill them later.
Piano Wire?
Yeah, more or less. So I'm ready to rate this sucker. You?
Yeah, I'm ready to rate it.
I'll give it a respectable 4.7 out of 5. It was that good. It was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple little things out of place, but I was happy with the movie altogether. And it was well worth to see sit there and watch it.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll give it more of a 4.4. I mean, I know that there's been other movies that have had similar plot lines to this, and I like seeing them do a totally different route as to how they can tell the story.
Yeah.
I know you have some issues with motion sickness. Did you feel that way while watching the film at all, considering how it was filmed?
No, this one wasn't too bad. I mean, like, this one, I was ready for it. I was not, like, I'm not going to be on a camera the whole time going, ooh, this was, it didn't stay, like I said, there was a third-person view that actually stayed outside of the units. They just kept flipping back and forth between the camera views. So there was one that you could see that was coming from their chest from that small one. Then there was a small little handy cam, and then there was the third-person outer view. Like, you know, you could actually see all the characters and stuff like that interacting with one another, but yet all three different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they're doing a run scene, they're not going to keep you on that camera that's on them. They kept a camera that was, like, basically, when they were doing the one when they had the shotgun.
Yes.
He had the camera right on him and stuff like that. So, yeah, more or less that's how that was. But yeah, it was done very well. I felt that it was shot very well, and I didn't gain any motion sickness from it.
Okay.
Not like the game that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we'll get to that game in a little bit.
Right.
But let's still go into the element of, like, guns and...
Guns blazing?
Guns blazing, yes. Guns blazing, but more in a war sense. Because this past Friday, they put out the beta on Xbox for a video game that you've been waiting very patiently for, Medal of Honor Warfighter.
Yep. Even though Medal of Honor has changed in its evolutionary phase, how it kind of dropped off after a little bit.
Yeah.
Seeing that EA and DICE and now what's called Danger Close apparently is now working together on this, they've definitely created a special, you know, setup now for how Medal of Honor works.
Because let me ask you something. With Medal of Honor now being more modern, do you feel like maybe some people might complain that there will be not much of a difference between Medal of Honor and the Battlefield series, the way the Battlefield is currently going?
Well, that's the thing was with playing Battlefield 3, it has more of a parkour run to it. It has a fluid kind of thing to it, where you run and you can hop over obstacles really fast. This game didn't have that. This game has, like, I noticed that there's more movement when you're looking at the character. His body doesn't all move. Like, the body on the torso actually moves with the gun and stuff like that. I can see it when I'm looking at one of the other characters.
Right.
When you're just doing a regular walk, it's not. It does. It seems like it's too slow for me. I mean, the usual walk is just, you know, just a walk.
It's just
I felt like they're just doing it too slow, but maybe I'm not accounting for, like, the heavy gear and all that other stuff that
a soldier
would be wearing normally, where they have basically a rucksack that's like 100 something pounds or something like that.
Yes.
But with the setup that they did on this one, like, the running, when you do get into a run, it gets running faster. You can't really run and gun, I want to say, on this one. You have to pick and choose. You have to run, get to a corner, figure out, you know, where everybody is, maybe around that corner, toss a grenade, fire a couple shots, get to another part, and, you know, get, you know, not the normal Call of Duty run a gun where you're running and still pulling the trigger and holding the gun, you know,
yeah,
because your accuracy is going to suck ass in this game.
Which is what I think happened with me during my second time playing with this game, trying to run. I swear, I shot this guy in the face like 4 times and he still managed to kill me.
Yeah, well, but that's the other thing is I think that with these games now, they're taking into effect the realism of how a gun fires. When you're firing a gun, the gun's not going to stay leveled the whole time. It's going to jump. It's going to move. And that's what I saw when I was trying to kill some of these sons of bitches online, is when they came around the corner, I go and fire my shot, and I'm like, blah, 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 and they keep moving back and forth and stuff like that. And I can't place my shots as well as I usually do. But that's just because of the fact that I'm still getting used to the game. Once I started getting used to the game, I started laying waste to people. And that you know, I started figuring out how to put the bullets down, how to lay fire, how to figure out where and when the maps were going and stuff like that, instead of just, like, walking blindly into a room and getting hatcheted to death.
So why did the opposite happen to me? Like, when I first played this... Okay, so I went hands-on with this game at E3.
Yeah.
But it was a PC version.
Mm-hmm.
And I was laying out people here, there, and everywhere. And I think maybe the reason why is because these are people that have never played this game before.
Well, yeah, but like that's the thing. The beta was just put on last night.
Yeah, and now people are getting used to it.
That's the thing with me. It doesn't take me very long to adapt to a game that I feel that I can actually keep playing and not get annoyed with. Like if I'm playing when I started playing like the Call of Duties and Modern Warfare's and the Battlefield 3 and all that other stuff, it took me like all of maybe 2 or 3 hours to know exactly how the movement was, where the character was able to go, what he was able to do, and then I just was just like, okay, I got this, and just go out there and take people out. And that's the one thing that people got to know is if they pick up a game like this, they have to give it a little bit of patience, because not everybody's going to be able to walk up to that game and play it and go, fuck, I'm amazing.
Right, and it's not like you're going to play Call of Duty and automatically assume you're going to be great at Medal of Honor, because there's a totally different control scheme for each of them.
Yeah, you got to throw grenades differently. I mean, the trigger for the gun is the same.
Yes.
The
movement's the same, but everything else about it is different.
Well, I mean, there is some kind of things like I was telling you earlier was like there was a I felt that it wasn't as fluid on the rifle to pistol movement.
Right.
Because there's people online. If you go to like YouTube and you check it out, like, there's military guys that they actually do competitions and stuff like that on the person who has the fastest draw.
Yeah.
And for the most part, a lot of these soldiers just do it on a daily basis. They always practice, you know, their draws. So if you've got your rifle and you've got a 3-point sling, you just let go of that, grab your pistol, and you'll be up in, like, 2 seconds. This one felt like I pressed the button, and he went down like that, and it took way too friggin' long to bring up the gun. So that time that I go click, 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 and then go to the gun, it doesn't help me because of the fact that it's taking too long just to bring the gun out front and put rounds down range. But yet, if you figure out how to play it properly, then you're able to make the character go a little bit faster and do what you need to do to get him done.
I don't know if you noticed this too, but when I was switching between regular shooting and scope, when you're a regular shooting, you just hold down the trigger and you're all dead.
Yeah, but that doesn't.
But then when you scope, it only does one at a time.
Which gun did you have?
Which one was it? Because I was part of the Canadian Army, because I chose the Canadian Army one.
Well, that's probably why. Why'd you pick the Canadians?
Because I wanted to give them a chance.
No, you don't give the Canadians a chance. You don't. You don't ever give the Canadians a chance because they suck. Lo and behold, I was trying to figure out when I went to the the Topsfield Fair, why there was the Canadian Mounted Police at the Topsfield Fair. I was like, hey, do you have your passport then? But no, more or less what the whole setup was is like I didn't find that issue. I found like when you go down the thing, you were able to just hold down the trigger and go at it. But with me, I don't really care. If I have to do semi-automatic pulls of the trigger just to put somebody down, I'll be happy to do that because it just makes it easier because... If you ever go on full automatic, your gun's jumping like a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
If you got 3-shot bursts, it's like brrr, and then you have to set it down again and set it to the where you want it, and then pull the trigger again. That with a semi-automatic, it's bang, one up, bang, back, and you're able to, you know, keep it level because of the fact it's not putting out as many rounds as the gun is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So with the game on this setup, the realism is getting in there. It's very nice. I like the actual play of it. And that's the thing that kind of got to me was just the fact that beforehand, when King over here was saying, oh, blah, the first Medal of Honor Warfighter game sucked ass and all this.
Oh, it wasn't called Warfighter. It was just Medal of Honor.
It was just Medal of Honor. But, I mean, the whole concept of the Afghanistan, you know, campaigns and how you felt that the movement wasn't that good. But when I played, like, the online multiplayer aspect that I got a beta code to, I thought it was actually running pretty well. And then... finally, out of the blue, I found it for cheap on Amazon. I bought it. I played it, and I thought it was done. The story was done very well because it gives you a different view of how like the actual realism of Afghanistan, like, you know, the warfare is going on.
Yeah.
Battlefield, that kind of went on a global aspect because of the fact that it's going against Call of Duty. Call of Duty, theirs is on a much greater scale. They seem to be able to do it, like, what they're writing and stuff like that. They're able to, like, Tom Clancy the ending and make it, like, this big epic scale thing, like, oh, God, I think it was Modern Warfare 3. You end up at the end, and you're on a boat race and stuff like that. Boat chase and stuff like that. Here's all these big friggin', you know, boats on the harbor and all this other stuff, and you're in a submarine, and the submarine, they need to save you from the submarine. So more or less, it's one of those things. They're able to epically do it. Battlefield 3, with their game and stuff like that, it seemed like there was an issue, like, there was a big issue that was going on, but it didn't seem as intense as Call of Duty did.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that takes away from Battlefield, because of the Battlefield setup has better realism to it. It has a lot more guns range to it, because of the way that you can actually customize your gun.
Right.
But now that Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier came into play, I noticed that they were trying to add with the Medal of Honor Warfighter here, is just that they wanted to customize the gun a little bit more, do a couple little more tweaks to it and stuff like that, because of the fact that the Future Soldier one had so many things to it. So I'm hoping that that's going to be another retrospect to that, but they're not going to steal it from Tom Clancy.
Right.
So
they're going to try to make it in such a way that it's their own. Yeah.
But just to playing it for the last couple nights, it was a lot of fun. It was. I definitely look forward to this game, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to buy it right off the bat right now.
So. Yes.
Unless somebody wants to buy it for me.
Someone wants to get it for you for Christmas or something like that.
Any of those listeners out there, if you want to buy me a game, and I'll review it. I don't care what it is. As long as it's not Sonic the Hedgehog, number 2.
Adventure 2, specifically.
I'm sorry, Adventure 2.
Because, okay, so... Now that you've segued yourself into that...
Do I have to do a rating on that, or is it just because it's a beta? No? No rating? No.
Okay, beta?
The beta, just out of 5, I want to give a 4.2. It's fair. It's good enough. It's going to take you a little bit to get used to, but once you get used to it, you're going to like it.
Yeah, I'll give it probably the same, 4.2, or just maybe just a 4 period. Just give it a 4.
Okay.
Because you know me. Like, I prefer single-player, first-person shooter sort of stuff. I'm not really... too deep into the multiplayer aspect of stuff. I'm not saying I didn't have fun with it. It's just I had my ass handed to me.
I'm sorry. I totally forgot on that aspect. Okay. Battlefield 3 is first person only. It's never third person.
Yeah, I know.
Medal of Honor is third person. Was it third person?
No, it was first
like,
person.
It felt like it was third person.
No, it was first person.
Because I thought I saw the reticle outside of that. But... That was just me. I thought there was a difference between that. My bad. Brain fart.
Yeah.
Don't mind me. Alright, so next part.
We were able to get a couple codes to review some of the games that Sega are re-releasing as HD. One of which was Sonic Adventure, and the other one was Knights, and I wound up buying Jet Set Radio. Now, Blonic, I know you tried playing Sonic Adventure 2, but you had some...
About 3 to 4 levels of it. Before I wanted to puke my brains out.
Now, he's not
now,
saying that...
I'm not saying that literally. I'm not saying that literally. I'm saying it physically. Because of the fact that... I mean, I'm not saying that, like, if you bring me out on a ship, you know, I might have a wee bit of seasickness. I have had it before when I was just a lot younger. I remember going on the big red boat and puking in front of everybody in the dining hall, which was so much fun. But yeah, for the most part, when you take a look at it in the other sense, and I want to say this beforehand, I want to say to Sega that I like you guys. You have done good jobs on games and stuff like that. This one is just a little bit off from what I feel regularly because of the fact that I just don't think that you put enough effort into it. On this one, I feel like they just really didn't put enough effort into this game.
Well, remember, this is a HD remastering of the game that came out in 2001.
Yeah, that's it's not HD. It's not HD at all.
You don't think it's HD?
If I could see through characters and all that stuff, I know it might be a beta, the aspect that they're doing. That's the other thing that I have to say is I might want to wait a little bit longer until the game's actually physically out. Is this physically out yet?
Yes.
It's physically out?
Yeah, it came out yesterday, the Friday.
Maybe there's an update for it, and I can check it and see how it is. Because of the fact that I felt that there were some little things that like you could see through that shouldn't have been able to see through. The aspect of it, it was really bad. All right,
because I remember playing this game as a kid. I used to have Sonic Adventure 2 Battle for the GameCube, which in itself was a remake of the Sonic Adventure 2 on Dreamcast.
I'm going to have to fucking drag you to my house and have you play it because of like how it was. So let's put it this way. I felt like if you wanted to torture somebody, this would be the game to do it with. Let's put it this way. They had music playing in the background, and it wasn't background music, it was foreground music. You couldn't turn the fucking music down. I couldn't turn the music down so I could actually hear what the characters are saying. All the character stuff was subtitled. It was all subtitled. I was like, why is this subtitled? And then I started realizing that there was a shitload of music in the foreground that I couldn't figure out why it was in the foreground.
Mm.
So, upon trying to listen to what they're saying and reading everything that they're saying and getting blasted by the music, even though, I mean, I even turned my surround sound down and I still was getting blasted by the music. And it just was that bad that it felt like I was getting, like, tortured. So next to that, playing the actual game, the first part was Sonic, running around doing all that stuff. I felt that was okay. It was pretty fucking cool.
Yes.
After that, it went downhill.
Because you don't play just as Sonic, you play as Tails and you play as Knuckles.
Yeah.
On the light side, because on the dark side...
On the good side, then there's the dark side.
Where you play as Shadow, one of the robots, and that bat, who I keep forgetting their name.
Whatever it is. They introduced a couple of different ones. I mean, I know I haven't been in the Sonic realm for a while, but they introduced some people in there, and I was like, who the fuck are you? What the hell are you doing here? I don't like you already. If I could jump on you and hit you multiple times with the Sonic hit, I would. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of movement issues that I had.
Okay.
So, like, on the first part, when Sonic gets to his little boss battle, there's this guy... I think it was the Shadow guy, but he was in a robot thing. He flew around. He laid out, like, gunfire, so he just had to run away from that. And then he landed down in his mech setup. And then he had to jump up and hit him. And if you hit him just... If you just landed by his feet, it would knock the rings out of you. And it got to the point where it pissed me off, where I had to step out of the room for a second, scream in a pillow, and then come back, and then I defeated it.
Yeah.
And I did a little happy dance. But it doesn't hold to, like, what I remember, like, how the other original Sonics were, like, or otherwise the other 3D side-scroller version that
right, played Sonic 4 Episode 2.
That one was fucking cool.
Yes.
That one, I thought, is what I was getting, but I was wrong because I was like, oh, yeah, didn't the King already get that already? Oh, crap, he did.
Yeah.
So when I was playing this one, that's what I thought I was rolling up on, and it was a total kick in the pants.
Okay.
So with the concept of it being a... Oh, God, man. How it was, I just... When I got to the Knuckles part, that's when I started physically getting ill.
And I felt like those levels, the Knuckles ones and the Bat levels, because those are similar, those were the weakest aspects of the original Sonic Adventure 2, because they dragged, and the camera angles were total shit.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. King didn't understand. I said the game, physically on a text, I said the game made me sick. I said that I had to turn on the AC and, you know, I actually had to cool down a little bit and drink some water because I felt nauseous because of the motion sickness that I was getting from this game.
Yeah.
I felt that when you're trying to fly Knuckles around the thing, that's perfectly fine. As soon as you get to a wall and you have to try to turn around to figure out where the fuck something is, it's not there. You can't turn the camera angle, otherwise the thing starts to shake a little bit, or the character gets stuck in the corner and starts spinning around like a little asshole that you're like, why are you spinning around, you stupid little asshole, stop it. And then finally you get him out of the corner, and you're like, what the hell was I doing again? Like, I literally got to the point where I don't have bad ADD. I don't have, like, the extreme one. I have a little bit. I know a little bit. I know very little.
Yes.
On that aspect. But it's just one of those things where this one got to the point where you're like, what the fuck am I doing here? I mean, there's this whole thing where the gem got blown up, and you don't know why it got blown up or how it blown up. You didn't see where the pieces went to. It just blew up.
I think I get it explained on the dark side, the dark story mode.
Yeah. But when you go into this aspect, you're flying around this place that looks like something like out of Egypt. You don't know why the hell you're doing it. And I had to figure it out by bumping into the birds. And this is while getting blasted by music that I didn't want to get blasted by. Mm-hmm. And couldn't shut off because there's nothing in the options that says turn down the music. Or turn up the voice. It was, I was just like, that's one of those things that in a game you have to have control over. Otherwise, it's going to make the game absolute shit. You're going to play the game muted? Who wants to play a game muted? Not me.
No.
I mean, usually with me, I was just about ready to turn the music on that I usually have over that fucking music because it was that bad. Mm-hmm. It was just horrible. It was absolute shite. And that's the thing. It's like I'm gonna write Sega and say that I'm gonna give them at least a week on the whole update thing. Update it, play it, and see how it goes, and then I'll write a review. Because it's just one of those things where I don't know if a lot of people want to put the money down to play this game.
Right.
It hurts physically.
Because the reason why I'm not putting money down on it is because I've already played it. I played it back when it was on GameCube. I've beaten it. I remember enjoying it for the most part, but I just hated those Knuckles levels because they were just such a pain in the ass to find those missing gems.
I disliked the Tails levels. I don't know why he was just always walking around in a goddamn mech vehicle. I was pissed off about that. I wanted him to jump around. I wanted him to fly. Not in a vehicle. He has tails. Right. That's what he does. Yes. He flips those suckers around and he flies around. He uses them as a helicopter.
Yes. We should point out, too, that we're both really huge Sonic fans. In fact, your name, Bluonic, is actually a play on Sonic.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you were on the paintball field, you were wearing blue, and you were speeding away.
I always run around and bunker people, and they wouldn't know where I was, or if they saw me, it was just a big blue blur.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of those things where it's kind of part of my name, and I don't ever really want to down Sonic, but this game was really that bad that it made me physically ill. And I mean, with me, I have a furnace in my body that just seems to warm up, and you know, and that was one of those days where it was like, you know, it was a cool day out. It was a cool day out. I turned up the AC and I opened up the window. That's how hot I got. That's how, like, my motion sickness, like, I don't know, I don't think I was getting sick. I'm not sick right now. I'm perfectly fine. But I'm just saying that it got to that point where it was just overheating. And I just was like, I feel like utter shit right now because of the motion sickness this game has given me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of those games that if we wanted to stick anybody in Gitmo and have them play it, that would make them talk. That I was like, I want to talk right now. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just like... If you wanted to find out something that I did bad, just go ahead and make me sit down and play that game, and then I'll tell you everything, because that's how... It was torturous.
You're right.
It was bad.
So...
I don't even want to give a rating right now.
That's perfectly all right. So I'll only move on to an HD remastering...
I'm going
to
go puke right now. Jesus.
Jet Set Radio. This, in my opinion, is how you properly remaster a classic game.
Yeah, that was polished. It was nice. We saw this back at PAX East, and it looked...
It was bright. It was beautiful.
It looked beautiful back then, and it's even beautiful and more beautiful now. It's awesome.
I've written a review about this with Knights into Dreams, which I'll go into quickly after this. But Jet Set Radio is one of those games that, when it first came out, it was revolutionary. It was the first video game to actually use the whole cel-shaded cartoon look in a 3D world.
And provide really good music.
Yeah. I mean, the soundtrack.
It wasn't Parappa the Rappa.
Because not only did you have, like, the original soundtrack, but you also had licensed music from, like, Rob Zombie and Jurassic 5 and Mixmaster Mike.
They were telling us they had about at least, what, 75 to 90% of them. Yeah. All, like, from the original one.
And they got it out. They got it up to 98%.
Oh, fantastic.
So, basically, you just got about every single artist that was featured in the original Jet Set Radio on this soundtrack.
Which is fantastic.
Right. I'd take 98% over anything else.
Yeah.
So, in this game, if you've never been familiar with it, if you're not familiar with this game at all, you're rollerblading around town, you're tagging streets and signs.
All right, kiddies. Tagging means spray painting.
Spray painting. You're basically Shepard Fairey on rollerblades.
Yep.
And you've got to avoid the cops, you got to avoid rival gang members.
No. There's two different versions of the cops. There's the riot patrol ones, basically, that run around and swarm you like a zombie herd. And yep. Then there's the one that's the captain that has a really rugged shin and a really shitty haircut and keeps shooting at you for no apparent reason, seeing that the only thing that you're actually doing is tagging.
Yes.
They don't have the proper rights to shoot somebody, but apparently that's how that game was.
Yeah, it was supposed to take place in a futuristic version of Tokyo where, like, all good things are considered bad. Kind of like, remember that game Revolution X?
Yeah.
Where all the fun stuff was banned. It's kind of like that situation. But later on, you have
to... But also, was like kind of reminded, the game kind of reminds you of like how Crazy Taxi was.
Ah, now that's a game I would love to see come back at some point.
It did come back. It did come back as like a download for the arcade thing.
Yeah, but the music wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of bad.
They should make Crazy Taxi 4.
Yeah.
That's what they got to do. But in this one, later on, you got to face off against like other army members and... all this other fun stuff. And you can also pull off tricks. This was like right during the time when Tony Hawk Pro Skater was first coming out.
Cool borders and all that other fun stuff.
Yes. This was a game that actually made rollerblading cool again. And I feel like this is what's going to happen once more. Like, people are going to play this game. They're going to want to go out, get themselves a pair of rollerblades, and just take the town out.
Too late. I already got some.
I know you do. I've seen them. And it's... I'm really hoping that Jet Set Radio is given another chance to be given another video game. A brand new one. Because I think they could do some great things with that franchise.
Oh, yeah, they could basically turn it into a Grand Theft Auto version now because of how the graphics are and how much people put money and efforts into everything. So they could probably put in a whole setup where you could play their music or set list that you have already made for your, Xbox or whatever.
Yep.
And it'd work out just fine. I think that would be probably the best thing that they could do with that franchise. And make
Yeah, I would say out of the three HD remastering ones that Sega has released, this one's the best. Because I feel like it shows the full-on potential. And it does such a great job with bringing back that original feeling that we got when we first played it years ago.
Yeah, that was I, like I said, like the last episode where I was kind of stuck on the aspect that I was not wanting to do too much nostalgia stuff. Like Double Dragon, that one was crap. This one is okay with me because it was like, it was cheesy, but it was also fun. That was my aspect of that. Double Dragons was cheesy, but really fucked up and not as fun. It was just, it just wasn't my cup of tea at the time and stuff like that. I at the time when that game was coming out, I was rocking Mortal Kombat and doing all the other games that was I felt were much better. Not like, that's the thing. I didn't give a shit about mainstream. I don't give a shit about mainstream. Whatever game's coming out, I don't care what level of like popularity it is. If I find that it's, mainstream, whatever. I don't care. I'll play it. I don't care.
Yeah.
But like, I always find games on the beaten sides of the beaten path that are out there that are even better. I went back to Sniper Elite V2 and beat the living hell out of it again the other night, and I felt good about myself because it's a good game.
Yes.
And not a lot of other people feel that way about it. I love the game because I could put a bullet through a Nazi like 500 yards away, and it's so much fun.
You can blow up a guy's testicles too.
That too. Blow up the grenade packs on them. But to get back to the actual game for Jet Set Radio, I felt that it's awesome that you're able to go back. I still don't know why that there's like this Jamaican guy that's yelling at you half the time to do stuff, or why he's controlling like the gang aspect of it, or saying which gang is going where. Shifty bastards. But
he's awesome.
But yeah, it's awesome at the same time because he's pumping some good music and jams and stuff like that while you run around and try to make sure you gain back your territory. Now, what they got to do is they got to put these mother suckers on rollerblades with machine guns and the tagging aspect and be much better. I don't want to go bumping into the girl that was tagging. I want to shoot her. So just fix it that way.
I don't think these guys are want to kill. I think maybe pellet guns.
Okay, fine.
BB guns. Airsoft guns. We want to keep the T rating so the little kiddies can actually enjoy a good game for once.
No. They got to suffer.
And the other HD game that they released was for Nights into Dreams. And I remember when this game came out back in 95, 96. And back then, people were just clamoring over, oh, how beautiful it was, and how cool the gameplay was.
Yeah, and how good Spyro the Dragon was as well. But
yeah,
that's besides the point.
But now watching it, you can actually, when you buy this version of Nights into Dreams, you can switch back and forth between the remastering and the original Sega Saturn, and comparing the two, say that when we were younger, we looked at Sega Saturn graphics and, oh, this is beautiful, this is how video games should be. Now, compared to what we've seen the current gen consoles do, everything's all blocky and not rendered properly, buggy here and there.
At the time, we didn't really acknowledge anything at that aspect. Like I told you last show, where it was like, I've gone through like the whole evolutionary phase of how games went. I mean, from playing it on, you know, Atari, where you had like the crappy little stick figure running around with a basketball going, and then I remember playing on my old, and I mean old Hewlett-Packard. I mean Hewlett-Packard playing with the floppy disks. Yes, kids, floppy disks. And playing games on that sucker where you actually have to type in the code instead of having a thing program such as Windows to run the friggin' thing so you can actually see stuff and click on icons and do stuff. So to go from all these games, you know, how crappy they look and all the blocks and stuff like that because of the fact that they were going by a block setup, like that's how they made pictures. That, like, how to see the actual physical pictures and to make them move on the screen was by blocks. And that's bits for you.
Yes.
So, going from how we see stuff when we were younger, we're just like, woohoo, this is great! Because the TV sucked back then anyway.
Yeah, that too. It's not an HDTV. We had standard.
We had a big standard friggin' CRT TV that if somebody put a golf club through the friggin' front of it, it would explode. Now, if you do that to one of the other TVs, it won't necessarily explode, but if you hit a plasma, it'll leak everywhere.
Yeah.
But, for the most part, damn, our fucking childhoods were dangerous. Anyways, I mean, as good as it was, as better as it was for the concept that we weren't, like, the 1950s, where, like, the parents wouldn't give a shit, and, like, the kids would be in the back without any seatbelts, and they would take a sharp turn and lose little Timmy.
Yep.
This was on that aspect of, you know, it was, shit was still dangerous, but, I mean, you know, lead toys and whatever. But no, for the most part, like, playing, like, the actual games and seeing, like, how, like, I even remember when I was playing N64, and it was at the time where it was, like, Sony, N64, and Xbox were out. And
don't you mean Dreamcast or Saturn?
No, I remember Sony. Sony PlayStation 1.
Yeah, because at that generation it was Saturn, PlayStation, and
I'm not saying that it was when they all came out at once.
Okay.
I'm saying that it was like within a couple years of it and whatnot. And
all right.
My friend was saying, oh, N64 is better and blah, blah, blah. And I was watching them doing one of the wrestling games. And I saw the Big Show come out and he had blocks. His chest was blocks. Everything was blocks. I was just like, that looks like absolute shite. And then I go and play Xbox, and I'm like, that looks much better, you know, or PlayStation. That looks amazing. Hell, I was just like, I want to go see what Jet Moto looked like today. I went and looked at it, and I almost puked because of how the setup like, was going. I mean, but, like, that's the thing. When I had, like, the motion sickness again, I had another game that happened with me that was one of the remakes that they brought back, which was Duke Nukem 3D. When they had the Duke Nukem 3D come back on the Xbox, and I played that, I thought I was going to have motion sickness because of the fact of how the world moved around me.
Yeah.
It was really bad. So,
remember, that's how games were back in the day.
Yeah. Don't remind me.
So hopefully, there'll be other games that come out that can fix some of this whole motion sickness thing. And it won't be much of a burden on your belly.
I'm just glad I didn't have anything to eat at that time. Otherwise, I would have fucking puked. My whole downstairs would have just been full of puke.
Yeah.
I would have lost weight, though. Anyways.
So, on that note, why don't we stick a fork into this?
4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Do you know where your children are?
We don't have children.
Exactly. They're in our nutsack.
Remember, visit our website at b3crew.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to talk about, you can reach us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and Bluonic is under Bluonic.
Of course. We're also on facebook.com/bostonbashbrigade. Or otherwise, just go up to the search bar that's on the top part of the Facebook and just go Boston Bastard Brigade, and then you'll find us. Comment on anything that we put up there, please, because we're lonely. Not so much, but we're lonely.
Yeah. You did a great job with all the pictures from the Phantom Gourmet.
Yep, we did the Phantom Gourmet recently. I'm going to be working on the Topsfield Fair one, if that's cool with you.
Yep.
All right, cool. Unless, are you going?
No, I'm not going. No.
Oh.
Well, when are you going?
I kind of already did. Well, you're working, so it sucks.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, buddy.
It's okay.
But
I'm glad at least
We were trying to go the day before, but it seemed to be a bit foggy and a bit questionable about rain and all that other stuff.
But it didn't rain.
I still think it rained, but it was pretty muddy still the day after that. But it was a nice day out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, for the most part, that one's coming up. I've been just doing so much lately, so. Been doing a lot more traveling, so to say, but yeah, to make everything look all party and stuff like that. Yeah, we've been doing a pretty good job on that. We've been getting pretty good numbers, correct?
Yep, we did some pretty good numbers. Now, I hope if you're listening to this show on Tuesday, tomorrow, which is October 10th, a Wednesday, Middle East Upstairs, myself, Bluonic, and Panelicious, we're going to be at the P. Lander Z and Electric Eel Shot concert.
If you're listening to After Effect, sucks to be you.
Yeah. Because then you have missed out on one of the best live acts on the planet. I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Electric Eel Shock nearly tops the list of bands you need to see before you die.
Yep.
And we are planning to interview them as well. So look out for an interview with Electric Eel Shock later on in the week.
I'm so screwed. but yeah, we also want to say affiliates for ESH, or Electric Sisterhood.
Yes.
Help me out here.
Geek Aggro. Issues program?
Issues. Did we finally get their set up yet?
Not yet.
Son of a bitch.
Because remember, we're...
No, I don't care.
Okay.
EGM now.
Our friends at Structure Gaming. Dual Shockers.
There's some MMA out there. TPS, Team Predator Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Cage Titans. CES, all the other MMA groups and all the other stuff that we have that we're trying to contribute to. Go check out our website and you can go see what we've done recently so you can see what everything's going on. Oh yeah, Buster Massive.
Yes,
them too. They're awesome.
Okay.
Alright, we're good.
Very cool. So, until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
Bluonic!
Reminding you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard.
But it sure helps.
Yeah.